I couldn't get the, I've missed the irony of, you know, there's this, we're so busy, and then I'm going to get up and talk to you about being crazy busy. Kind of an odd tension, but it works itself out, and I'm going to show you that in just a minute. This is the last sermon for this series, Crazy Busy, and then next week we begin a sermon series out of the book of James called True Religion, What It Is and Seven Things It Isn't. You know, religion is supposed to be like a signpost that guide us into living life and drawing close to God. It's supposed to be that. But there's so many voices in our world that are telling us, oh, you should be doing this, or you should be doing that, and you should be doing this. And often they're contradictory, and often they don't bring life to us. They often make us feel imprisoned. And so I wanted to look at what the scriptures say. What is true religion? And interestingly, James talks about what it isn't, so we can understand what it is. And so if that's something, if you're wondering, if you're feeling a bit of a quandary, wondering why you follow God or why should I follow God, that series would be a series worth coming to bring your questions and ask God to answer them. So that'll be next week, but we are still finishing this crazy busy series because we are crazy busy. In fact, I get emails from time to time on the sermon, and I got this email from an individual, and I just want to read it for you. I felt drawn to email about the sermon this morning. I really appreciated it. It was something I've been really working hard on this past year. My journey started after I left my abusive marriage. I listened to an audiobook called God Never Blinks. I adopted the writer's motto that if something doesn't bring me joy, then it doesn't belong in my life. And I started saying no to things and asking God for help and then having a lot less guilt. Being a single mom and starting over is hard. But by streamlining my life and only allowing the important things, I have a lot more joy and a lot less useless stress. Now that's my sermon series in an email. Because the truth of the matter is being a single mom raising your child would be crazy busy. But not just being a single mom raising a family, there's other things. Being a mom at home, a stay-at-home mom with toddlers, is crazy busy. I forgot what that was like, and then I have a grandchildren, and I went out to look after them, and I'm like, oh, I can't do this. That was the first hour and a half. I was just totally exhausted. I put them to bed and went to sleep myself. Or, you want crazy busy? Try starting a new business. Or, going back to school as a teacher or a principal. That's just crazy and busy. Parenting teens, or parenting a child with special needs, or managing a growing and demanding company, or serving in a hospital emerge room, or trying to hold down more than one job. You want crazy busy? Or just living here in the GTA. Somehow, our lives get crazy busy. And if you were under the impression from the series that I was trying to sell you on some reality where you're constantly blissfully tranquil with nothing interrupting your life and no stress, then I think you misunderstand the series. Because the truth of the matter is, life is busy and you can't avoid it. Life is busy, and you and I can't avoid that reality. But here's the interesting thing. If, as followers of Jesus, we're willing to listen to how he directs us in life, there can be sanity and balance and fulfillment even while we're crazy busy. In fact, I wanted to narrow it down and make it as simple as possible, so I got a 2-point plan that comes right from Scripture on how to deal with crazy busy. It's called 2 Cheats on Busyness. Now, if you don't want to hear them, you can leave right now. And we'll all know that you're perfectly in balance in your life. But if you're kind of interested in what 2 cheats might be, Just stay tuned. Now, I know some of you are sitting there going, I really like to leave right now, but what would happen if I did? He just said I could. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Cheat number one. Rest. Rest. The scripture uses the term Sabbath. It's just an interesting name for rest. Now, this is where this cheat can't come from. It comes from the very opening of the Bible in the book of Genesis. And in chapter 2, Moses writes, Moses was the writer of Genesis, Moses writes, by the seventh day, so hold it, seventh, meaning there were six before, what happened in the 6 days before that? God was creating the world. And in the seventh day, God finished the work that he had been doing, and so on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day, and he made it holy. Hold a stop there. Holy. If you were here in the summer and you heard Charles Price, he talked about holy things. A holy thing is something is chosen for a purpose. And so God blessed the seventh day and he made it holy, meaning he was giving it purpose. There's a purpose to this day. Because on it he rested from all the work of creating the day that that he had done. Now, a good question of that passage would be, why would an all-powerful, self-regenerating, so God is self-regenerating, that means whenever he gives out energy, he in and of himself regenerates and replaces it automatically. The closest illustration we have to that is the sun, and it's imperfect because it's losing energy, but the sun shines heat and sunshine down on us every day, and it just keeps coming and coming and coming. It never ends. So why would an all-powerful, self-regenerating God need rest if he's regenerating that energy back in as soon as it goes out? Well, he doesn't need the rest. We do. So he's creating a world and he's laying a foundation for it. And part of the foundation is that there is activity and then there is rest. And that's how we as humans will function best when we have activity and rest. Now, all you have to do is just look at your body to know that. While you're sitting here, what's your heart doing? Boom, boom, activity, rest, activity, rest. And when it stops doing the activity part, we'll know because you just fall over, right? But for your whole life, your heart has been going boom, rest, boom, rest, boom, rest. It keeps doing that. It's activity, rest, activity, rest, activity, rest. I didn't know this, but our brain works in the same way, in brain waves. Activity, rest, activity, rest, activity, rest. When you think about your day, you get up in the morning all day long, activity, and then at night, rest. Activity, rest, activity, rest. Every day of your life, you've been doing this. When you look at our year, when you look at the seasons of your, in spring comes activity. Everything starts coming to life. In summer, it matures. In harvest, it begins. We harvest it, but it begins to what? Die. And then the winter, rest. Everything, leaves fall from the trees. Everything stops growing. Everything comes to a rest. Even in our country, we get to experience this. A blanket of snow, like we're going to sleep. The earth is going to sleep under the blankie. And then spring starts again. Activity, rest. Even those that are in the best shape in our part of the world, in our culture, who are they? The professional athletes. I mean, there's nobody in better shape than them. Well, they do activity, game, and then rest. At least 2, often 3 days rest to recover from the activity. Then activity, rest. And then activity, rest. They even have an off season so that they can rest and recover from the previous season so they can go into the next. Activity, rest. I was talking to a coach at a gym. We were talking to about, we got on a topic, there's some people that come to the gym every single day, and this is the coach speaking. And he said, yeah, that's not really healthy. Because when you're working out, you're breaking down the muscle. Activity breaks down the muscle. and it requires rest in order to rebuild the muscle and the body. And so people that keep coming every day, they don't, their muscle never really recovers, and they don't recover, so they don't get stronger, and they don't lose weight because they don't have rest. So I have a new exercise plan. Rest 7 days, activity zero. I'm going to just see how that works for me. Okay, I'll go exercise 1 day a week. But activity, rest. And you know what happens when we don't rest? You're familiar with that word burnout. Some of you have gone through that. Here are some things that happen when we don't rest. When we don't give our body and our mind and our emotions and our spirit rest. Mental and physical breakdown. Anxiety that can get so bad it needs medication. Now, I'm not saying all anxiety is a result of a lack of rest. I'm saying a lack of rest can produce anxiety. Losing track of everyone in your life except for those that are immediately right there. So busy you don't have time for other people. Irritability and distress. Low or non-existent. It's funny, when we need it the most, our self-care, you know, sleep, right food, exercise, when we don't rest, those things are the first things to go. The things that keep us going are the first things to go. Thoughts in constant disarray. Everything that feels important takes over. Non-essentials begin to take over. And then lack of sleep, of course, creates a downward spiral. What is true of not getting sleep on a daily basis is true of not getting rest in a weekly basis. We're slowly killing ourselves. Hastening to a quick end. I love this verse from Jesus and Mark on the Sabbath. So the Jewish people, Jesus was Jewish, they had a Sabbath that was built right into their law. And on that Sabbath, that one day on Saturday, Jesus was going through the grain fields. And as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain, which in the Bible didn't say anything you couldn't do. But the Jewish leaders, the religious groups, had formed laws to protect the Sabbath. And one of them is you're to do no work. And they said this was the type of work that you weren't supposed to do. And as they began to pick the heads of grain, the Pharisees said to them, look, why are they doing what is unlawful in the Sabbath? What, going to get something to eat was unlawful? And he answered, have you never read what David did when his companions were hungry and in need in the days of Abiathar the high priest? He entered the house of God and he ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. In other words, there was a higher priority with David, even though the bread was for only the priest. David in his need was a higher priority than the law that he should never eat it. And he said, didn't you understand that? And he also gave some to his companions. And then he said to them, the Sabbath, now listen to this, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And when you elevate the Sabbath and obeying it and keeping it so it becomes a form of righteousness, you are now flipping around what God said was the right pattern, and that is God gave us a day of rest, 1 in 7, and then he says, and by the way, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. I'll tell you what's right. God gave us a gift called a day of rest. It's a gift for you. God built it right into the foundation of our lives and who we are on this planet as human beings. Now, if you've been around a church for a while, then this idea of Sabbath may seem a little bit confusing because it's part of the Old Testament covenant, the Mosaic Law, or the Law of Moses. And by the way, I thought that was obsolete. So why are you talking about Sabbath? I think it's important to understand there are two types of Sabbath in the Scripture. There's a creational Sabbath, and there's a ceremonial Sabbath. In the beginning, when God created the world, that's the creational Sabbath. As part of our foundation, he gave a gift to us. One day in seven was meant for rest. And it's not like, oh, you can take it or leave it. God says, this is the way you function and stay sane in this world. You take one day of rest in out of seven. You're made that way. But then, and the people that from creation, whenever God created this world, for thousands of years, human beings practiced that to one degree or another, and they would take their Sabbath, and they would take rest. And then thousands of years later, when God chose to call Israel as his nation, he gave them a particular set of laws that were unique to them and were designed for this new relationship he had for them. And in that, he took the Sabbath, the idea of a Sabbath, which was already established in our world, that he had already established, and he made it law for Israel. He made it part of their ceremonial law. You keep these Sabbaths. And there was three types of Sabbath. There's one day in seven, which already was like the creational Sabbath. There was also 1 year in seven. You would work the land for 6 years, and on the seventh year, you would let it rest. And then there was the one after seven. So after seven sets of 7 years, there was this 50th year called the Jubilee, which they were also to take off and rest, and to give freedom to anybody who was an indentured servant. Pay, cancel all loans. Everything was a reset, was a major reset. This was part of the ceremonial law that God gave to that nation, these rests. Now, the ceremonial law is made up of a lot of different things, but the two major things were sacrifice and Sabbath. If you know anything about the Old Testament, you've been exposed to it at all, you know there's a series, especially in the Law of Moses, of all these commandments about how you're supposed to sacrifice. And the religion of the Jew, of the nation of Israel, was about sacrifices and bringing the right sacrifices to God at the right time. And primarily their sacrifices were for what? Their sin. When they failed to obey God, or they had messed up, or they had done harm in some way, they have sinned against God, they were to bring a sacrifice. They'd take an animal of some sort, depending on their sin and what sacrifice they were bringing, and they would kill the animal, its blood would flow, and that would cover them for their sin. And so God was teaching them as they did these sacrifices that in order to make your life right with God, first of all, we are broken, we are sinners, we fail God, we sin against his righteous and holy and good law, and when we do fail, we have guilt, and to deal with that guilt, we need to come to God with a sacrifice. The only problem in the Old Testament was they kept having to go back because they kept sinning, and so you keep going back year after year, sacrifice after sacrifice, year after year after year after year, they keep going back, which told them one thing. The sacrifices that we're bringing might make us temporarily right with God, but they don't take away our sin. And the reason we're told in Galatians why God gave them that was that law of those sacrifices was meant to point them toward the ultimate solution. When you keep having to do something over and over and over and over and over, eventually you go, is there any way we can take care of this and finish this one time? And God had a solution for the sin of mankind. And that solution has a name, and that name is Jesus. And so when Jesus came, both God and man, in a mystery where God entered the world and became fully human as the perfect Son of God, he grew up, he ministered, taught about God and righteousness and how to have forgiveness of sins, that he was the forgiveness of sins. He took our sin, the sin of the whole world, and he died to pay the price of our sin and settled all the sin of all mankind one time on the cross because he was a perfect sacrifice. And being God and being infinite, he could pay for all the sin of mankind. And then when he rose again on the third day, it was proof that his sacrifice was acceptable, that sin had been covered. The solution had come. And for those who are willing to put their faith, to receive Jesus as their Savior, to surrender your life to him, you receive the forgiveness of sins. Paul in chapter 3 says, a righteousness, which means to be fully good with God, is available not through our actions, not through the law, not through the sacrifices, but through Christ and faith in him. Now, Concurrent with the sacrifice, God also gave them another thing, Sabbath. And the idea of the Sabbath was to say, there is coming a rest for you in your sin with me. That as you pursue me and follow me, not only is there a solution for your sin, there is coming a rest from sin, a rest from guilt, a rest from living a life wondering, is there any meaning or purpose to this? A rest from chasing significance and importance, a rest that centers itself in God. And that rest has a name. And that name is Jesus. In fact, in the book of Hebrews, we pick up the thought, the writer of Hebrews picks up that very thought. And he's talking about rest. I'm going to jump in at verse 8. For if Joshua had given them rest, remember Joshua led them in the land. We did a series on this, I think, a year ago, and they were fighting all the time. They had to fight everybody, and the rest would have been the rest of God. Once the enemies are vanquished, we'll have rest. And he says, well, if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken later about another day. There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. Well, if the rest had come through the law or had come through Joshua, why would God later on promise another rest? So there must be an even greater rest than the law promised or that came through Joshua. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from what? Their works. That straining and striving you do to make sure you're right with God, there is a rest for that. Just as God rested on the seventh day. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest so that no one will perish by following their example of disobedience. So he's referring back now to the people who went into the wilderness with Moses, but they disobeyed and would not do what God wanted, and they never received the promise that he gave them. They never made it to the land. And so let us not make the same mistake of not trusting in God for the rest that he promises, but trying to work for it by our own effort. You see, that ceremonial rest that was in the law, that was designed to point people toward there's coming a day when you'll have rest from your guilt, rest from your sin, rest from your sense of I don't know what my life is about. That's not the same as the creational rest that God created the very first, well, on the seventh day. We no longer need to obey the law of Moses because it was fulfilled in Christ, but we are still human beings created in this world and living in this world. We still have bodies that need rest. We still have souls that need rest. Our emotions, our minds need rest. And we also still have a spirit where we communicate with God, that part of us that makes us conscious and knowledgeable of God, that still needs rest. We still need rest. And this is the first cheat to busyness. I can't take busyness out of your life, neither can you. We are busy, that's the way life is. We're never going to be able to avoid it, but we can insert rest into it one day in seven. Now that's why I like Sundays. Because part of rest is feeding our souls, and you're doing that by being here to come and sing to God. To be part of the prayers that take place, to listen to his word be preached. You're feeding your spirit. And that's why I like Sunday as a day of rest, because your spiritual side is already built right in. You just have to roll out of bed and come. Actually, I would say it's better to come prepared, but come and meet with God. And then you have the rest of the day, by the sounds of it, that's going to be pouring rain, and you have the rest of the day to do what is restful to you. Now, for those of you that are like me, where Sunday's your busiest day, you're going to have to find a different day that's your day of rest. Because God said the pattern is 6 days of work, one day of rest. In now, we're not obligated to follow the Old Testament rule that Saturday is our day of rest. We are never told that Sunday must be our day of rest. But we are told that we are created to have one day in seven. So what day is your day of rest? If you can't do Sunday, what day do you have? Now, one of the most common questions is, well, what's rest? Like, what can I do on the Sabbath? Well, when you give your child a gift at Christmas, and they come to you and say, well, am I allowed to play with it? Well, of course you're allowed to play with it. Just go have fun. Do with it what you want. Have fun with it. Explore different uses for it. Enjoy it. It's a gift from me to you. Well, that's what the Sabbath is. What brings rest to you? For some, a nice nap is great rest. Probably for a lot of us, a nap would be a great rest. So others, it's exercise. For others, it's non-exercise. Maybe it's cooking. Maybe it's gardening. Maybe it's going visiting people. Maybe it's planning. Maybe it's spending time with one another. Doing stuff as a family. Being alone, walking in a, I don't know what. Figure it out. You will know better than anybody what truly brings rest to your body and your soul and your spirit. It's a gift. But if you don't implement it into your life, then you're missing one of the key items in the rhythms that God has designed us for, that that refurbishes your spirit and refurbishes your soul and your body. So the question you need to ask yourself going from here is, do I have a day of rest? And if you don't, then listen to God and start creating a day that will be your day of rest. A day to recover. Now, there's another cheat, and I just want to touch on it real quickly. It's a cheat called, cheat one is rest. The second cheat is just time with God. So let me just read this passage, this story from the life of Jesus. So as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. Now, can you imagine? You know, like whether we like it or not, generally speaking, women are the ones that lead and take care of the home. You take the most responsibility for it. We know that. And us men are not wanting to change that. Just understand, we're happy that you have all the work. I know you're not happy, but we are happy. I'm just here to be honest, that's all. Now imagine having Jesus come and visit your home. Can you imagine the flurry of cleaning that was happening just before he came, walked in? She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to. So Jesus is in the home. Martha's busy. Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet. It's Mary's house too, by the way. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. And then Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you're worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed. I wonder if he was looking at her menu. You know, sometimes we do overdo it. In fact, only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, a couple things I want to notice. Jesus never says to Martha, come on, smarten up. He never treats her that way. What she's doing is important. In fact, he says, there are many things that need to be done. There are many things, busyness can distract us from important things, but I'm going to tell you, if you learn what is important in life, you're going to be busy. Doing important things will make us busy. And Jesus never degrades Martha. He says, yeah, what you're doing is important. It's really important. But there's only one thing that is necessary. He doesn't give us a formula to fit the necessary into the important things. He just says, there's the top thing, the one thing that is best, and I won't take it from her. And what is it? Time with him. I mean, get it. Martha doesn't do her job. Jesus doesn't eat, neither do the disciples. They liked what she was doing. It was important what she was doing. It was necessary. But Martha was choosing what was first over the rest. Mary, rather, chose what was better. I have no formula to figure out how you fit time with God into your life other than to make it your first priority and then everything else falls in its place. Over the years of walking with God, when I first came to Christ, I was 17, 18, somewhere in there, and one of the first things my friends did is took me to a retreat with a bunch of youth. We all went to a camp and it was fabulous. It was a lot of fun, and we were having a lot of fun. But the speaker was talking about cultivating a relationship with God. And I remember him challenging us to say, if you do nothing else in that day, make time with God. And I remember making a commitment at 18. 15 years ago, I made that commitment. It was a lot more than 15 years ago. And so I've walked that in my life. There's been days I miss, sure. There's time, seasons where I miss. There are times when I go into my devotional time with God, my time with God, and I walk out and I go, I don't know what that was about, but God wasn't there, I know that much. That's just life. But I can tell you that the only way you will have time with God is if you make it the priority in your day. And I can tell you this, when you do, even when you're crazy busy, everything else somehow finds its place. This saying was always true about finances. The idea of tithing, you know, giving 10% of your income to God. And there was a person that said, I don't know who said it, but I have found 90% with God goes a lot further than 100% on my own. And you know, that's true of time too. I have found that when I give God his first place, it goes a lot further than when I'm busy and don't include him. Martin Luther, father of the Protestant Reformation, was quoted as saying, I have such a busy day today, I'm going to have to get up earlier for my hours of prayer. I mean, if you're busy, what are you doing spending hours in prayer? Because when you spend time with God, when you choose what is best first, everything else falls into place. I'm telling you, I have lived that for 15 plus years. And it is true. And here's why it's true. There is something about spending time with God where there's a download that takes place. When I'm with God and I spend time with him, it's amazing how many times my devotions focus on an issue in my life. And they give me wisdom or direction or peace or help in dealing with that. It's amazing how many times I walk out of my time with God and then I feel stronger. I feel like there's been grace given to me. Or I see it in the day that I had a grace and a strength to face some things I didn't think I could face, didn't want to face. That there is life that is imparted from the presence of God to us. And because God is real person. And when we stop and spend time just with him, the energy that God has gets downloaded into us. I don't know how it does it. It's just, I guess it's like when you're in love and you spend that time with the person you're in love with, you come away feeling filled up. And then everything else just finds its place. Now, if you never had a devotional time, I just want to take a second and say, if you never had a devotional time, it's not complicated. Start with the book of John. Start with the book of Mark. Start somewhere in the New Testament. One of the Gospels is great. And read a section of a chapter. Just read it. And then ask yourself, what did that say? Like, what's it saying in there? And when you can say it out loud to yourself, you know, you kind of got a summary of what it says. So now you got the thought. And now pray. So read it, think about it, and pray. You can do that in 10 minutes. Now, it's kind of like my experience, and many have heard, it's kind of like a toddler. You know, when they first start walking, at first they kind of stand there and they're, you know, and then they fall down and then they have to hold stuff. But eventually they start to take these little steps and you're cheering them on. It's great, those little steps. But it's not long before then they start stringing steps together and then they start running. And starting a devotional time is kind of like the toddler. You just, you know, take 10 minutes. But it won't be long before 10 minutes isn't enough for you. And you'll start running and learning and growing. You'll fall down. It'll be hard. You'll wonder, what's the effect of this? But the cumulative effect of spending time with God week after week, month after month, year after year, produces in you maturity as God changes you to become the person he wants you to be. Mary, Martha, what you're doing is important and you're busy. But Mary has chosen what is better. So the second cheat is choosing what is better. First, make that the priority, and then the rest will fall into place. You see, I'm not interested in you becoming non-busy because it's an impossible goal. And by the way, busy people are people that make commitments, that are faithful, that have responsibility, that have goals. That's maturity. And so those things make us busy, and that means mature, godly people will be busy. But to manage the busyness in your life, there's two cheats, the two-point plan. One day in seven, begin to learn how to rest. And each day, spend some time with God, and everything will find its place. You'll have to say no to some things to make those happen. You'll have to rearrange some things. Get those two things in place, and there will be sanity and balance and fulfillment in the busyness. So, picture it like this. You decide you're going to drive to Florida. You and some friends, or you and your family, whatever it is. You get the car ready, you get it all packed, and you start out. You map your route all the way down to Florida. What are you going to do at regular intervals along the way? Yes, you're going to scream at the kids, but I didn't mean that. I meant, what other things are you going to? You're going to stop for gas, and food, and bathroom, and rest. So, if you do not stop along the way, what will happen on your trip? Well, you're going to be irritable, and angry, and anxious, and eventually your car is going to stop on the side of the road. And then the fighting will begin. And so in order to make the journey, you know that every so often we have to pull off the road, fill up, get rejuvenated, get back on the road. And it's like that in life. You're on a journey. You need to pull off every 7 days, pull off, take a rest, rejuvenate. Each day, have time with God to fill you up, get back on the road. I want to end, I started this crazy busy series is based on a book Kevin DeYoung wrote called Crazy Busy. How original of me to have a title like that from Kevin DeYoung. I want to end with this quote. Just listen to what he says. It's not wrong to be tired. It's not wrong to feel overwhelmed. It's not wrong to go through seasons of complete chaos. Why? Because that's just life. What is wrong and heartbreakingly foolish and wonderfully avoidable is to live a life with more craziness than we want because we have less Jesus than we need. Let me just read that last sentence again. Let's read it. What is wrong and heartbreakingly foolish and wonderfully avoidable is this: to live a life with more craziness than we want because we have less Jesus than we need. Rest and time with God. Simple two-point plan for sanity in the middle of crazy busy. Let's pray. Now, Jesus, thank you for the gift of rest and Sabbath. Thank you for the invitation that we have to come into your presence. And so we call out on you, and I want to pray over your people, and I want to ask that you would bring the truth of the Sabbath and of time with you to bear upon our lives, not as something to cause guilt, but as something to give freedom. God, this was not meant, a sermon meant to guilt people. It was meant to give life. And so I pray that as people engage and trust you and put these practices into life in some way, in some form, that they would begin to experience that life-giving sanity and balance and hope and strength that you provide when you are the center of a person's life. I pray for courage to apply the truth that comes out of your word to our everyday life. And for those who have the courage to step out and implement this, God, I pray you would reveal yourself and show up and show yourself to those people in a very unique way. May the joy that they're lacking begin to return. May the strength that they need begin to be full in their lives. May the grace that is required for their families start to pour in. And may a sense of wonder of you begin to fill us again as we choose what is necessary. First.